Hello and welcome to the fourth and final episode of Ashes to Ashes, where we'll be discussing where it all went wrong for England in a 4-0 series defeat at the hands of Australia. On today's programme, the gossip. We'll hear all the news leading up to the 2020s, which start next Wednesday, a look back at the Ashes series as a whole, and what were the key moments and performances which turned the tide the Aussies' way. A review on the positive side of the tour and England's success in the one-day series, and we'll hear our guests' thoughts on the future of England in Test cricket, what needs to be done, and who needs to be brought in to change our fortunes. You're listening to Burst. Hello and welcome to the final episode of Ashes to Ashes, where we'll be summing up England's tour of Australia, both ODI and in the Test series. Joining me today are the returning guest, Craig Short, who's a wicketkeeper batsman. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Tim.
Also is all-rounder Jack Richardson.
Hello.
And we have Dave Bromley. I would call you an all-rounder, Dave, but you're also a wicketkeeper batsman.
Yeah.
Good to see you, Dave.
Thanks. Good to see you too, Tim.
We'll look at also the gossip right now. England played a 2020 game this week where one of the stars of the game was David Willey. He's been playing in the Big Bash. England won the game by 8 wickets and Willey hit 79 not out. Renowned as a bowler, but scored a lot of runs, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is he someone that could potentially, with the 2020s being next week, could open the batting? He opened the batting the other day.
Potentially, yeah. He absolutely whacks it. And every time he's been put into the top order in county cricket, he's done the business in the NatWest Blast and things. So there's no reason why they can't try it. They've got such a strong squad. They can try a few things, I suppose.
Well, it looks like they've sort of carried on from the one-day form. Going into the 2020s, you're looking at some of the other names in the side. Jason Roy went very well in the test arena. But then you're looking at dropping someone like Alex Hales down the order. I mean, England have just got so many options in one-day cricket at the moment, haven't they, Rick? I mean, what would you say about William putting him at the order?
I mean, I think it's a luxury that England are fortunate enough to have in the one-day setup at the moment. I think if you see in Yorkshire last year, he was opening in the NatWest Blast pretty successfully as well, but I think for England he just can't get into the top six or seven, really. It's too tough to see where he could slot in.
He's not someone who got selected into the IPL squads, was he?
No, I wasn't, I'm pretty sure.
No, well, we've got the IPL squads in front of us, and this is somewhere where a lot of England players have been selected, and there's been some players that haven't been selected. Joe Root's a guy that didn't get selected. He's a guy that averages higher than Steve Smith in 2020 cricket. And Steve Smith was the biggest. He went for the most amount of money, something like 1.8 million or something like that. Is that something that surprises you, Craig, that someone like Joe Root's not going aside? And then Chris Wokes went for a lot of money, Ben Stokes, obviously. But Joe Root, the main man, didn't get picked. Is that a surprise?
No, obviously that's a surprise. You know, he's got a great T20 average, but that could be coming off like the back of his lack of success in the Ashes. He didn't do that well. But yeah, it is strange not to see him at least out there.
Looking at some of these squads, does any of the teams really catch your eye? We've got a few of them in front of us here. Rajasthan Royals have a particularly strong side. Steve Smith, Ben Stokes, Joss Butler, Rahane, Darcy Short, who's gone really well in the Big Bash. Are they going to be the side to watch out for, do you think?
Yeah, they've got, well, Joshua Archer as well. He's one of the most talked about T20 players in the world at the moment. So, yeah, I think they'll be quite dangerous, to be fair, looking at that side.
Well, Joshua Archer's a very interesting one because, for those who don't know who he is, he's a West Indian player who actually is wanting to play for England. He plays for Sussex in county cricket. Plays for Sussex as a young guy. I think he's only 22. He is West Indian, but he wants to play Test cricket for England. And he's absolutely torn it up in the Big Bash. He plays for Hobart, who are in the final as well, going into, they're playing, who are they playing? Hobart.
Strikers, I think, won today. Was it
Adelaide? Sorry, Adelaide beat Melbourne Renegades today. So, yeah, a great player. He's a fantastic prospect for England. So that's another player added to the one-day side, certainly, if not the Test side. We'll obviously talk about the Test series and where it all went wrong there. One of the big talking points, we talked about it every time on the show, was Ben Stokes. Ben Stokes has a hearing coming up for a fray. He's been selected in the New Zealand tour, in the Test side and in the one-day side. I don't know if it annoys you. It annoys me that he's being charged for a fray, which is basically having a fight in public. It's not like assault where he's gone out and beat someone up. That's what it looked like. But he's being charged for something else, for public fighting. Is it annoying that it's possibly going to be at most a fine for this charge, when basically, so he basically could have gone out there because the charges aren't that serious now. So does it bother you that that's the case now? Because he could have actually gone out there with these charges.
Yeah, I mean, it's something you can't sort of rush that, and it's in from a cricketing perspective, obviously it's incredibly frustrating not seeing arguably one of the best players in the world play, but from kind of like a societal standpoint, yes, they couldn't really do too much about it. I think the ECB handled it as well as they could do in the circumstances, and Stokes has sort of had to just keep quiet for the most part. Don't really see what else they could have done. It is frustrating, but
yeah, I mean, from an Australian standpoint, Craig's probably quite pleasing.
Yeah, it was good to not see him out there. But I think the ECB, yeah, like Jack said, they sort of handled it very well. They couldn't really let him go out there. I think they also didn't know what was the case, like what was going to come out of it. So yeah, I don't think they could have sort of let him go out there and play in the Ashes. It's good to see him in the One Day stuff, and yeah, I think he sort of served his time almost. He's missed out on the Ashes. And
Would it have made a difference if you went, do you think?
Yeah, I think he is probably one of the better players, well, one of the best players on that side, 100%. I think he would have made a difference with bat and ball.
In terms of England getting a result?
It's hard to turn around 4-0 but with one man, but I think, yeah, he would have definitely helped. Definitely.
What do you reckon?
It'd have probably been our quickest bowler, to be fair.
Yeah, more than likely.
Might have helped a little bit.
Do you think England would have won a test match, or won two test matches if he went? It's one player. Having said that, you look at someone like Mitch Stark, who didn't play in the Melbourne test, and you know, we were able to rack up 500 in the first innings when one bowler wasn't playing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cliche, but he is a game changer, isn't he? With bat and ball, he could just produce a moment. That will change a game. So
I think if you've got a player in there that good and he's building pressure at one end, it instantly makes everyone else play a little better. He's quite an aggressive player as well.
Yeah.
He could have completely changed like sort of the mood in that camp.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree. But in terms of changing the whole series, it's probably a bit of a stretch. But like I said, if Steve Smith didn't play in the series, England might have won. It is really down to individual performances. Cricket, it's one of those games. Anyway, we'll be discussing where it all went wrong in the Ashes, and that'll be coming up for you next. Okay, now we're going to move on to the Ashes series itself. It was obviously a 4-0 defeat to England. A very disappointing tour overall. We never really got into any of the games. There was one draw in Melbourne. That was the game where Mitchell Stark didn't play, and Alistair Cook made his only score of the tour. It's very frustrating from an England standpoint, certainly, that Cook was able to pull out a performance like that on one occasion, because that's the match that we did go on to draw. I mean, I predicted at the start of the series that him and Root would be our top two batsmen, and he fell well short this series, didn't he, Dave?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you look at his stats compared to the Australian side, he's averaged 47, and they're sort of fifth highest average, Tim Payne, at 48. So,
yeah.
I mean, the stats are just awful for England, really.
I mean, someone like Pat Cummins, who was batting at number 8, is able to average above 40, yet there's top-order England batsmen, the likes of James Vince, Stoneman, Bairstow, that could not do that themselves. I mean, the biggest surprise for me was Mitchell Marsh. He came into the Australian side. I didn't rate him at all. I still don't think he's a great cricket player, but he was able to average... He'd never scored 100 for Australia, averaged over 100. How surprising is that, Jack? Just it kind of reiterates how sort of one dimensional our England bowling tack is.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't help that he sort of came into it when they were completely on top. I think he came in for the Perth Test match and he was an absolute road. And he obviously just filled his boots against a pretty mediocre side in those conditions. Nothing coming from the spin department. just made his life pretty easy for him, really. Everyone bowling sort of low 80s on a flat, bouncy deck. It's a recipe for disaster as far as England were concerned.
Craig, from an Australian fan's point of view, what do you think the big obviously we know that Smith did very well, and there are a lot of good performances, but what were the big differences other than maybe Smith between the two sides?
I think the thing that changed, or the difference between the two sides, is definitely the bowling. I mean, Jack sort of said it there, just sort of facing on, especially at Perth on a flat deck, there was, when you come to Australia or when you go to Australia, you need to be able to do something other than just sort of running and bowl 80 mile. In England, that ball will swing, it will do a bit. In Australia, it doesn't do that. You need to offer something else. And I think Australia had that with their bowlers, and England sort of just, I think they missed that pace. I think that's one thing that really, really let them down, is that lack of pace.
Well, like we said, the Melbourne test, like we said before, Mitchell Starc didn't play, and a guy called Jackson Bird came in. He's a guy that bowls around 80, early 80 miles an hour, similar speed to what the England bowlers bowled, and he causes absolutely no problems. So it's quite evident from my point of view that is the big difference, the bowling, because if you swapped it around where the Australian batsmen were to face the Australian bowlers, I think the bowlers would get on top of the batsmen. I think their bowling attack's better than their bat. They've got a couple of good bats, obviously Smith we know. And if you did the same with the England side, the bowlers bowled at the batsmen, I think our batsmen would get the better of them as well. I mean, do you agree with that, Dave? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. The bowling in Australian conditions, you can't go out there with a lack of pace. But at the same time, we didn't have pace bowlers available. Well, we did. We had a couple, but
Mark Woods.
Nothing compared to the light. I mean, we've said that. We've been looking for a sort of 90 mile per hour bowler, but realistically, Australia had two, maybe three of them in their attack at all times.
Yeah.
I think from an England standpoint, what was most frustrating was probably sort of the stubbornness with the selection. Realistically, it's worth taking a punt on someone quick, but we were just picking people who were good in England, who had good first class records, and that's good, but we're in a completely different country, the other side of the world, and we're still trying to play like we're in England. The lack of foresight, for me, I don't really understand it. There are bowlers out there, and it's worth taking a risk when you're in conditions like that. You've got to play a team that will do well in those situations.
I mean, from what I'd heard, the Australians had prepared for this series, had this series in mind for the last 18 months. They were preparing for this series. From what you just said, Jack, Craig, do you think that is just a lack of preparation by England? Do you think it's poor preparation?
I mean, yeah, it's hard to prepare for something when you don't have the bowlers to bowl at you. Like, I mean, you're not going to face sort of bowlers bowling that speed over here in England, and that's what they needed to do to prepare. They needed to play on hard wickets. I suppose, yeah, they did. I mean, they're an international cricket team. They're going to be prepared for the Ashes. It's not like they weren't. It was a lack of preparation. I think they were outplayed. Maybe a couple of selection issues, yeah. But I think it all just comes down to this bowling, and there is a lack of speed in England.
Well, I think the problem was lack of speed, and then we look at the two spinners in both the sides, and unfortunately, me and Jack made the prediction that Moeen Allen was going to take the most wickets for England. We were actually very wrong. The stats show that Moeen averaged 115 with the ball, which is a shame it wasn't with the bat, but it was with the ball. And Nathan Lyon, other than Starc, probably he was their standout. You could hardly say he was their standout bowler. I thought when you go and play away from home, you need a bowler that's going to be able to hold up an end. England have been very lucky in the past to have Graham Swann and even Ashley Giles. Ashley Giles was not a guy that was going to take 5-6 wickets in a game, but he was always a guy that could hold up an end. We just weren't able to do that with our spinner, and I think that put a lot more pressure on our seam attack. I mean, how good... Moeen Allen was very poor, but how good was Nathan Lyon? Because Nathan Lyon sort of proved that he was a world-class spinner, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, if you looking at the stats, Australia only had four bowlers that actually took any wickets for them in the series, so they were so sure of their four guys to do the... They were so sure that their four guys were going to do the job. So if you look at it, 21 wickets compared to Mo's 5 wickets, that's just an embarrassing gap between the two of them.
And Moeen played a lot of he played in all the test matches. Mason Crane, who was a guy that was being called out for by, I think you said, Jack, that you wanted Crane to play a few more games. He did play. I mean, his figures are not great, but I mean, he only played one match. Should Mason Crane have come in earlier? Because he did cause problems when he did play, to be fair, in that final test match at Sydney.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't given the easiest job to come in the last test match on a pretty boring and not really, it wasn't the most exciting wicket, especially for a spinner. It was very slow. He'd have probably liked a bit more bounce in there. But I mean, he did an okay job, but I guess the Stokes dilemma was probably why he wasn't really able to get any game time, because if you drop Mo, you're losing a batter then as well. Even though he didn't score any runs, on paper you are losing one of your batters. Yeah, so
if you were the England coach, or if you were looking back at it now, what can you take positive from this tour? I mean, there's not too much, but is there any individuals or any guys that came into the side that you feel that did have a real positive impact on the side?
I think all of the players that came into the England side did the job that they were sort of out there to do. I think, yeah, a couple more runs can be scored, but it's their first Ashes out there. I think I'd be happy as a skipper and as a coach that what they've done. And I would say that sort of the big names like Root and others haven't sort of stepped up. The people around them, the new players in the side, have done their job. And I think if you're looking at it like that, those sort of runs where Root didn't carry on or someone else, like, we always had starts, or England always had starts, and no one really carried on. It's a bit.
I think that's a good point you make. I'm just looking at it now. 900s were scored by Australians. I think Smith scored a double in there as well. Only 300s for England. That was a double by Alistair Cook. But to score three times the amount of hundreds in your opposition, you're always going to be chasing the game.
But not only that, sort of four of them went big as well. Four of them scored over 150, and we've only got three guys that have actually scored 100 at all during the innings. So it doesn't look good, basically.
I mean, we can say a lot of things about England and how we were poor and this, that, the other, but cricket's a very difficult game to go and play away. Whether you go to the subcontinent, to India, it's very difficult to win there. Any teams that come to England have a really tough time. So I'm sure when we play in the summer that we'll have whoever we're playing, I'm not sure, but we won't really have any problem. I mean, Jimmy Anderson will be having the ball in his hand and Chris Wokes, and we'll run through sides and everything will seem like it's okay again. But it is very difficult to win away. I mean, I was looking at a really interesting article on BBC that was saying how even since the early 1920s, there's never been more than 30% of all test matches won away. It's always been 70% in favour of the home side. So it's a very difficult thing to go and win away. I mean, what's the solution to that? How can you get over that enigma of playing away from home? Is there a solution to it?
I mean, the competitions such as the Big Bash and stuff, although it's a much shorter format, they offer sort of the exposure in the different conditions. So that can only be a good thing. And then trying to sort of recreate conditions, I suppose. I guess they do that up at Loughborough. I saw they had a greenhouse before they went out there and stuff. So they're trying things. And I think with technology and the advancements, I think it will get to a stage where they will be able to recreate these sorts of things. And so in terms of preparation and getting players ready, they'll be able to do it at a much greater level.
Got it. I think Michael Vaughan made a point about, he suggested that you play, it won't go down very well with members and whatnot, but you play two of the first county games overseas. You go and play them wherever you're going to play your next tour. So you play two games with a Kookaburra ball on the decks you're going to play on in the next tour, and you play two games over there. Do you think that's a good idea? Do you think that's feasible?
Potentially, yeah. Or, I mean, there's sort of, you could go even simpler than that. And if you are touring a country, you get your guys out there to play in their sort of representative cricket, I suppose. But I don't know whether that would work or how it would be, how they'd be able to do it. I suppose in some countries the representative cricket is not strong enough, but there's got to be some sort of way of getting our players out and playing in foreign conditions before these tours, because they're obviously not getting long enough to prepare.
No, and it's not just England that are having this problem. I think all countries are having the problem of playing away from home, and it is really interesting. What is probably the most disappointing thing from an England perspective is that the wickets out in Australia were not the wickets that we played on 4 years ago when Johnson ran through the side. Every single wicket in that tour was very, very fast and very, very bouncy. These ones were actually not too bad. They weren't coming through around the Euros every ball like they were before. I think England realistically had the best chance to win on these decks, especially somewhere like Adelaide, where we did have a sniff in the game. I mean, from our standpoint, that is really disappointing. But I mean, looking at some of the other guys that came into the side, what are your thoughts on Tom Curran? Came in, he's obviously played one day cricket as well, but he seemed to perform quite well when he came in the side.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, even looking back into our summer, it's quite positive with the people we've brought in when we've had to. So look at Roland Jones, he was successful in England. Overton showed good character and so did Tom Curran. They probably didn't perform as well as they liked, but it didn't look like they were sort of overwhelmed, which we have seen in sort of recent years with some debutants.
Yeah, I mean, that is really positive, because when I can remember when we played there 4 years ago, and it was when Stokes just started playing as well. That was his first tour, and he sort of stood up on that tour and played very well. So it does bode well. If you're someone like a Jake Ball, what do you see for him? Where does he go from now? Because he's a guy that did get panned around. He's now been dropped from the side. Is someone like what's he going to do? What's his approach now?
Again, he's one of those guys who might play in the next home series and look great because it's moving everywhere for him, and he'll get a few international wickets and that might stick him in the side. But I mean, I don't think he impressed really at all. I can't remember him doing anything in this series.
No. So I mean, Australia come back over, I think, not this summer, but the next summer. Craig, from an Aussie standpoint, how confident are you? How close are Australia? Because we seem to be very far away from being able to win in Australian conditions. How close do you think Australia are to winning in English conditions?
I think England conditions sort of can suit Australia a little bit more. It's a hard one. It is tricky. Coming back to England is hard. The ball does move around a bit. The bowlers suit that so much more as well. When Australian bowlers don't really look to move the ball as much, they're sort of looking to beat the batsman for pace. So it's hard. It, again, depends on conditions and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think one good thing the Aussies do is they come over and play quite a bit of county cricket. There's quite a few names there that I recognise that play county cricket. Jackson Bird's one. I'm pretty sure that Hanscom's played for Yorkshire last year. I think Smith's going to sign with someone, he was saying. England don't get over to Australia that much, do they? I mean, I remember you saying that Crane had played some Shield cricket, but that he was the one of the only cases, wasn't he?
I think he was the first Englishman for like 20 years, I think, 15 years. So it just doesn't happen. I mean, obviously, they do only have sort of the five or six state sides, so the opportunity isn't there on the same level as England, where there's, I don't know how many counties exactly, but you're looking into the teens. There's a big difference in terms of opportunity there. So I think it comes down to that, really. It's up to England to sort of be able to create the opportunities that might not necessarily be first-class cricket, or whether it is, like you say, sort of having a first few games of our season maybe in a different country.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now we'll have a little discussion about the one-day series. This was following on from the Ashes, and England were able to come away with a great series victory over there. And it was a total transformation from the test result. Looking at individuals, the man of the series was Joe Root. Just a total different atmosphere, different feeling, especially from him. Do you think the captaincy has a big issue to do with that, with the fact that he wasn't captain, he was able to go out and play a bit more freely?
I don't think so. I feel like he still played the same. He sort of just wasn't under the pressure to convert the 50s to 100s, which I feel like in Test cricket he's probably feeling the cosh a little bit, under the cosh at the moment, because he just, in the last X amount of innings, he's not really converted. So I don't think he felt the same pressure, so you could just sort of relax a bit more. And I think throughout the team, there's some fresh faces in there, some guys that hadn't been involved in the test stuff. And I think it was clear to see that there was a completely different setup and atmosphere around the team.
For those that aren't too familiar with cricket or don't understand everything about it, why people will be looking at this and thinking, why are England able to hammer the same, essentially the same side, the same, certainly the same bowling attack, and score big runs against the same bowling attack in a different format than the test series, and able to play it with ease? Why is that?
Well, I suppose that's why they call it a test match, because it's the hardest level of the game. You've got to concentrate so hard, bat for long periods of time, bat against a ball that might move a little bit more than the white ball. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it is a huge mental challenge to score big runs in test match cricket. And I suppose you just get a bit more freedom, a little bit less pressure. And I suppose in the ODI side, they don't mind if you play a stupid shot and get out for nothing, because that's just the mentality of that side. But yeah, I'm not sure why they don't have that sort of approach in the test match, really.
Well, that's what you were just saying to me off air a minute ago about how they completely transformed the one day game. I think it was a couple of years ago.
It was after the World Cup. I can't remember what year it was exactly, but it was just decided that they were going to go for a whole new philosophy towards their play, and it's worked. They play probably the best ODI cricket in the world for the past five years, I'd say. But that mentality just hasn't crossed over into the test match cricket.
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of similar names that are in the test side. Johnny Bairstow, Joe Root, we've mentioned, Chris Wokes. Chris Wokes particularly had a very good series. He averaged 170 with the bat. He's actually more known for his bowling, but I mean, he batted terrifically, especially in that game where England sneaked a victory in the last game. Wokes scored 78. What a brilliant talent he is for England, and hopefully, you know, he can go on to do some great things. I mean, is Wokes going to be someone who's key in both one day and test match cricket for England, do you think, going forward in the next few years?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's someone that England have focused on quite a lot probably over the last couple of years, and he's really started to sort of show the improvements made, and especially with the white ball stuff, the bat, he's really picked it up. He used to score a few runs, but not necessarily the quickest, and definitely not with a few sixes, whereas if you look in the series, he was actually hit the most, joint most sixes in the series at 8, matching Stoinis, who's regarded as probably one of the biggest hitters in the game. So you can see how he's really worked on his game, and especially his batting in the one-day format.
Craig, from looking at the Australian side, one of the big decisions was not to play Glenn Maxwell early on in the series. He only played one game right at the end. Was that a mistake not to select him? Because he did score runs in the Big Bash.
Yeah, he was sort of in a bit of nick. He scored runs in the Big Bash. He scored some runs for this. Was it the state games he played in? He scored double 100 and 100.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, to not pick a man that's on that sort of form is a strange decision. And then, so what did he do when he came in? He didn't have the best of game. Yeah, I mean, but he's hit 30 and he was in some form. He should have been picked for that side, I think, personally.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, back to England, some of the great standout performances. Joss Butler hit an unbeaten 100, but probably the best batting performance certainly was Jason Roy's 100 in the first game. Dave, a really exciting cricketer, someone that can take the game away from an opposition. Is Jason Roy someone that could potentially come into a test side?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I feel like we're just always comparing it to the Australian side at the moment. But you look at someone like David Warner, who bats at the top of the order for Australia in all formats, and he goes out there in a similar fashion to Roy and just tries to hit the ball hard, score quick runs. So maybe it's something England could look at in test match cricket instead of sort of, I mean, they used Stoneman, didn't they, in the test series, who wasn't particularly proven at the top level. So Jason Roy scores big runs in international cricket, so I don't know why they haven't had a look at him for test matches yet.
Tom Curran also had a particularly good game. He took five wickets in the final match. Was a brilliant effort. Is that a defining moment for him? Because he's sort of been a guy that's been in and out the side over the last sort of year or so. But is that a defining moment for him, do you reckon, Jack?
Yeah, so I mean, he had some sort of success within the test series. He caused a few problems, picked up Smith, I think. But to go and win a game for your country, it gives him that confidence and the self belief that he belongs at that sort of level. So I think that can only be a good thing going forward. And I think they said he was the second youngest in ODI cricket to take an overseas fifer behind Chris Wokes. So can only bode well for him there, really.
Absolutely.
He played a few shots with the bat as well. He was sort of paddling yeah. the Australian quicker bowlers down later on in the innings. So he's obviously got a bit of confidence with the bat as well.
I think that's a feature of this one-day side. Everybody in the side can bat. And I think that's been a statement of how England have wanted to play their cricket over the last sort of 3 or 4 years. Everyone in the side going up to number 11 can hold a bat. And I think that gives the guys at the top maybe a little bit more confidence, a little bit more license to go and play shots. Maybe that was something in the test series that put a bit more pressure on that sort of top and middle order, that they knew that the tail was often run through by Stark and Cummings. And it was going to be all on the top order. But no, it was really positive to see a really good performance by England in the one-day series, and they take something positive from the tour. But looking at the coaching side of things, Trevor Bayliss is a one-day specialist coach. He's a white ball specialist coach, which is probably partly the reason why England have done so well in white ball cricket and not in test cricket. It's not uncommon for sides to have different coaches for different formats. Do England need to go down the route of getting a specialist test match coach in?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I'd say they're completely different games. I mean, if you look at T20 cricket and test match cricket, they are completely different. Yeah, you should have a different coach for that, 100%. I agree. It's a different game. You definitely need a different coach. Although they're all sort of going along the same lines now. Test cricket, obviously, average runs are going up. It is becoming more aggressive. And maybe England do need to adopt that one-day style a little bit into it. But it is a different game.
So you would suggest getting rid of Bayliss? And I mean, who is out there that you would think would do a good job in the England test side? Maybe someone like Jason Gillespie, who did pretty well for Yorkshire in the four-day stuff.
They did talk about getting him in when they first got Trevor Bayliss in, didn't they? But it's something they've tried before. I can't remember what years they tried it, but they had two coaches for a while, so why they went back to one I don't know. But I mean, Trevor Bayliss is like we said earlier, he's transformed the ODI and T20 sides, but he hasn't managed to do it with the test side. So I don't know, he can't lose his job for all three formats because he's done such an amazing job.
It is difficult.
In so the ODIs.
I mean, is there anyone out there, Jack? What are your thoughts on this?
I'm not sure exactly who they could go for, but I think the change is needed within the test stuff. His record's pretty poor. I think he's lost like 40% of matches or something like that, which is just nowhere near sort of any of the other coaches at test level England have had. And I think it's clear when they appointed him, he was appointed for us to win the World Cup effectively, which is they're still on track to do, hopefully. But he has completely transformed the white ball stuff, and I think that has sort of ended up with us neglecting the test side. And he's not shown great tactics along the way within the test arena, so I think the change is needed.
Is it neglect, or would you say some of the habits of playing one day cricket are spilling over into test matches? Because one of the criticisms was that England weren't able to dig in. I mean, David Malan was the guy that did, but a lot of the players weren't able to dig in and back for long periods, which Australia were. Is that because of playing too much one-day cricket? I mean, you look at some of the shots. Every time the ball went short, they wanted to pull. Every time the ball was outside off stump or wide, they wanted to drive. Is there a danger of one-day cricket spilling over into test cricket? Maybe you're right in saying that one-day cricket is a priority for England at the minute. And should that be a priority?
I mean, it was sort of needed to become a priority because it was slipping away from us really badly, especially that World Cup. It was nothing short of embarrassing. I don't know if it's necessarily a transition from the one-day stuff and it's like a sort of a knock-on effect. I feel like it's more sort of down to the philosophy, which is working for obviously the one-day stuff, but the philosophy in Test cricket is not that simple. You can't just go out there and be... You can be positive, but not, to, like you said, taking on some of the hook shots when they're telegraphed with two men out back at, out on the leg side. You know, you shouldn't be falling into that trap as a batsman in Test cricket. And I think that just comes down to the individuals. I don't think it's down to sort of playing a bit of one-day cricket because the Aussies have got the same.
Yeah, I mean... So we're in agreement that England needs to get a new Test coach. Are there any players in county cricket that you feel that should be knocking on the door and given an opportunity that haven't necessarily, for one, that got brought on the tour? Because I know Ben Foulkes got taken on the tour and didn't play. But is there anybody, along with Ben Foulkes, is there any other players out there that you feel need to be coming into the Test side over the next, you know, the next few months and going into the summer? I mean, Sam Northeast was a guy that you were talking about not long ago.
Yeah, and no, I still stand by that. I think Northeast, Roy Burns was another one who's been pretty successful over the last few years. But I think it's for some reason England don't like picking from Division 2, so I think that's always held Northeast back. But I think he's looking for this new season for a new county and he wants to play Division 1. And so that shows enough sort of where he is with wanting to play for England. You can see it's a priority for him. He gave up the captaincy of a county purely with the idea of playing for England.
Mm. Any thoughts, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear that the bowling's where we need to improve. But, I mean, if you're talking about guys with serious pace, there's not a huge amount of them out there at the moment.
Certainly not in a longer format anyway.
Definitely not, no. So, I mean, obviously Markwood was a huge loss from the Ashes and I assume if he's fit for the next Test series he'll be one of the first names on the sheet.
I think Roland Jones can bowl pretty quick, but someone like Tamar, it's a shame someone like Tamar Mills can't bowl longer formats and this kind of thing. Is there anyone in the one-day side that you'd think about recalling to the England squad? I'm just looking at the list now. Owen Morgan, I mean, it's probably unrealistic, but should Owen Morgan get another chance? He's a fantastic captain as well. Alex Hales, some of these guys, Jason Roy we mentioned.
Yeah, Hales is a potential choice going forward. I think his role would change moving down the order. I think we touched on Roy earlier as well. Again, he would, in the longer format, probably slot down the order. Bing and do sort of, within the batting, they do need to look forward because Cook at the moment is scoring nothing and the odd big score. Stoneman's not really sure down the other spots. So England could potentially in 2 years' time be looking for two openers, which is, you'd never want that situation really. You always want to have at least one dead set. So that's got to be a concern going forward as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think going forward into to next series in New Zealand, I mean, will England have a similar experience over there, do you think? I think the conditions in New Zealand sort of replicate England conditions a little bit more. So what are your predictions for that series? Because that's coming up. And Ben Stokes is a guy that's been selected for that series also. So predictions on that series. Craig, any thoughts on that? Or you've not really thought that far ahead? No, it's difficult. I mean, we've got the 2020s coming up as well. There's, I think, two 2020 matches against Australia. Do you think that's going to be two England victories again? We're going to follow on from the one-day series?
Yeah, I think we could. I think we're a much, much stronger one-day side than the Kiwis. I think they're lacking with the big sort of power hitters. I mean, you have got the likes of Monroe, but they sort of relying on Williamson and Taylor, who are good players and very solid players, but they're not going to blow you away. Whereas England have just got match winners from 1 to 11, really. So I think can't see anything but an England win in the one-day stuff. The test stuff would be a bit more challenging. But I think we'd stand up a lot better than we did in Australia.
And then the World Cup's next. Is the World Cup this summer? Or is it further ahead? I can't actually remember that. I think the World Cup's...
combined.
I think it's this year.
I think it might be this year as well.
So, I mean, what do you think? We'll just get Will to check that for us. But, I mean, what are your thoughts on the World Cup and England going into that? Because I think the argument is England are on top of their form now. Could it be a case that we've peaked a bit too early, and will other sides sort of take England's? So the World Cup's in May 2019. So that's next year, and it's in England, which will be a big plus for us. But will sides be able to catch up with England, if you like? And also, they could even take England's approach, which might be a little bit difficult for us to maybe maintain. Have we peaked too early?
No, I think there's always room for improvement. I think we've got that head start England have got that head start, and other teams, if they adopt that, they'll find new ways of playing, and that's sort of the part of sport. It develops and you find new ways around it. I think we've got that advance at the moment, and other teams will catch us up, and then it's about making that next step to find what works or what works better.
Sure.
I mean, it's easy for us to get carried away because we used to be so bad at one-day cricket, but I think even still in the rankings, we're only third at the moment, so it's not like we're blowing teams away all around the world. There are still some very competitive one-day outfits out there, so I think there's plenty of room for improvement within the England side. So if anything, it gives us a bit more time to prepare and still sort of cement the places in the team, because there are still a few question marks flying about.
Sure. I mean, Owen Morgan's not a guy who scored a wealth of runs for England over the past sort of year or so in the one-day squad. Because he's such a good captain, would you keep Owen Morgan in the... Is Owen Morgan got a guaranteed place in the side, whatever he does, because of how he captains the side?
Yeah, I'd say so at the moment, but obviously things can change in a year. They've given Joss Butler the captaincy a couple of times when Morgan's not been available, so he looks potentially like he's next in line in the ODI stuff. So, I mean, they've got so much talent available. Mm. Nobody's sort of cemented in that ODI squad because there's so many people fighting for positions.
And Stokes has got to come back into that side as well, so there's potentially a slot there. We're just going to finish on our predictions and what our predictions were at the start. We've all made predictions earlier on in previous episodes. Do you remember yours, Dave? What you said?
Yes, I said 2-2.
You said 2-2. I said 2-1 Australia.
I said 2-2 as well.
And Craig?
Yeah, I said 4-0 Australia.
Craig was the winner with 4-0 Australia. So well done to you, Craig. Congratulations. And thank you all for coming onto the show and being part of Ashes to Ashes. And thank you all for listening. It's been very good. So thank you.